Welcome back to Mountain Money. Well, on March 15th, the lifts at Park City Mountain Resort and at Deer Valley stopped spinning. Many in the community were disappointed, particularly during the following week when there was no school and no place to put their children. But those of us who were disappointed about missing the Easter egg hunt and other sort of annual staples of the community were one thing. Now, some people have gone a bit further and filed class actions against both Vail and against Deer Valley / Alterra for the Icon Pass regarding the early closure and the impact that that had on the value of their season passes. This morning we're joined by attorney Stephen Miller, an experienced class action attorney who will talk to us about how these class actions might work and what we might expect. Mr. Miller, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start by talking a little bit about what these lawsuits are. How does a class action like this work?
Well, they're both very similar. Essentially, one of the, say, season pass holders who was locked out of skiing at one of the Vail resorts or all of Vail resorts and had prepaid for a season is saying, okay, Vail, I was locked out on March 15th. There's still a season left. I want a partial refund for my unused portion of the pass. And the same is true on the Alterra matter as well.
Okay, so somebody files a lawsuit. How does the economics of that work? How do these people pay their lawyers?
How do the economics of the lawsuit work?
Yes.
Okay, so they find a lawyer, they have a lawyer, and typically in these types of cases, the lawyer works on a contingency fee basis, advances all the costs, and proceeds on behalf of both the named plaintiffs and all other members of the class that are similarly situated.
So is there precedent for a case like this? It seems like, I don't know, it seems like this has never happened before. Are there things that are similar to this that maybe they're relying on as part of their argument?
Well, I don't think there's ever been a class action brought because of a pandemic. And if there was, that would have been certainly a long time ago, perhaps the Spanish flu pandemic, but it hasn't happened here. But the legal principles are pretty straightforward. And so I don't think that's going to be, in my view, a big problem at getting a result for the class members of both these cases.
Now, many people are familiar with class actions because you occasionally get a something in the mail that says you were in this class and you get a certificate or you get this or you get that. Talk a little bit about what the characteristics of a class action are and why it makes sense to try to pursue a case like this on that basis.
Okay. So it's much more cost effective actually for both sides, both the plaintiff side and for the defendants, in this case, the two major ski companies. And essentially, the position of the plaintiff is that what's happened to me and the facts that have happened to me have essentially happened to everybody else that, I'll use the example of an Epic Pass, has bought the pass. So the facts are virtually identical. And so one person can represent the interests of everybody else because they're all in the same boat. And I think that that's a more practical approach, bringing it this way, as opposed to potentially having thousands of lawsuits brought.
So let's talk about, as you would approach this, and we're going to talk a little bit about where are we in the litigation. Actually, maybe we should do that first. So what we've seen so far are simply complaints that have been filed. Is that right?
Right.
And so what happens next?
So what happens, there's two lawsuits filed. One's in the San Francisco Bay Area. The other one is in Denver. And they're both filed in federal court. And typically there is a period of time that the defendants have to answer once they've been served with the lawsuit. It's typically 30 days or so. And they can respond either by filing a formal answer or some sort of a dispositive motion if they choose to do it.
And in order to have a lawsuit, don't you need to prove some sort of damage or some sort of harm or something that has happened to you because of this?
Well, they allege it in the complaint. And so the proof will come later, but the allegations that are pled in the complaint are deemed to be are deemed to be true, and then thereafter there will be discovery and depositions taken, and those facts will be examined. But the allegations that are pled in the complaints are deemed to be true.
And talk a little bit about, if you were looking at this, what a hypothetical damage model might look like, at least at the outset where we are now.
Okay. So many people have, I don't know how they've come up with the number, but take the position that, say, 20% of the ski season has been missed. And so if I'm a plaintiff in the case and I've spent $5,000, $6,000 on my ski pass, and I've been prevented from using it for 20% of the season, my damage model would be I want a 20% refund of that which I paid.
So doing the math on that, that could be a rather substantial sum. Do you have any sense of how many, you know, Epic Pass holders or Alterra Pass holders would be looking at this?
Well, perhaps. There was an article written by a Christopher Steiner, who's a contributor for Forbes magazine, and it's written in September of 2019. And Christopher Steiner suggested that Vail had sold 925,000 Epic Passes, Alterra sold 250,000 Icon Passes. So if you figure the number is $200-$300 of money that's owed per person, you could just multiply that times the number of passes, and obviously you can see that that's a fairly large number.
So early on in a case like this, you mentioned you'd see some kind of dispositive motions. Would you anticipate that there might be challenges, for example, to whether this is an appropriate class action, or does this seem pretty straightforward in terms of, you know, challenging what they call class certification?
So I think that the two cases, the Vail Mountain, which is Epic, and the Icon case, may be a little bit different. Right. And so the Icon case, for example, if one brings out the magnifying glass and goes to their website and looks at the terms and conditions, perhaps of the pass, they have a force majeure clause. And we can talk about that if you want. On the other side,
we will talk
on
about
the Epic,
that.
They don't. Okay. Epic does not have that.
I was going to say, we will talk about that because we talk about force majeure every week, apparently, on Mountain Money. Last week, we talked about it with football, so today we're going to talk about it with skiing. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead, Steve.
No, that's okay. So that exists in the Icon terms and conditions. I've looked at it. It appears really more to be related, not so much to the pass, but to third-party users of the Icon websites. But I would not be surprised if Icon and Alterra try to use that as a defense. And essentially, that's force majeure basically means something about the circumstances that are beyond their control, and that they should be excused from performance on their part. That's nice and everything, and obviously they shut down May 15th, but in my view, it does not excuse them from becoming unjustly enriched by allowing them to keep the money of their customers. Just refund the difference that's owed to them. That's all.
How is this different from when the resorts need to close because of lack of snow? I mean, if we had a bad winter, we could have closed on March 15th. Would we be sitting in the same situation where class action lawsuit could be brought against the ski areas?
That is a good question. And if I was a smart lawyer, I might say, well, I don't want to speculate on a hypothetical question.
Gotcha.
That might be better, but snow's not an issue here. We'd still be open close to now right now. This was a good year. Many people had trips planned. There were spring breaks coming up, Easter. A lot of people were holding off skiing until, you know, late March, early April. So, they take the position that they're entitled to the money, and an argument that, well, the snow could have dried up March 15th, I mean, that's a red herring to this case.
I think it is too, Steve, because I would think that the argument would be that both parties understand that there is a risk going into the season of lack of snow. We've seen it in some years. The closing date varies year to year based on snow. So I come into buying my season pass sort of accepting that risk, and that risk is on both sides. So I think you're right. I think that the virus, and particularly given the fact that we had some great snow, and we would see people hiking up the mountain to take advantage of the great snow after it was closed, I tend to agree with you that that's not probably going to be a promising avenue for the defendants. And, of course, I tend to see things from the defendant's side given my history. Let's talk a little bit about how, Steve, if you were in the conference room with the senior Vail or Deer Valley executives and you were acting as their defense lawyer, what would you advise them to be doing about these lawsuits? And what do you think of what Vail has done so far?
Well, I think that's a great question. I actually think they've done a good job. Vail's got, and they both do, they both have, in my view, two major concerns. The biggest concern, I think, this is their prime time for getting renewals and getting new customers to sign up for next year's season pass, and they don't want to ruin the goodwill that they've established. They don't want to piss off, if you will, existing pass holders. So I think that Epic has come out with a sliding scale approach and a fair way to handle this for right now, to both address the goodwill issue and try to get some sales going for next season. So offering the discount, I think, it was smart on their part. It's not going to cover everybody because not everybody's going to renew their passes. So that's going to have to be dealt with. But I think that's smart for Vail to do this. I think Icon at this point has offered a smaller discount, and we'll see how that goes. They're still going to have the problem of people that choose not to renew their passes. But so getting back to your original question, I think in the boardrooms right now, they got to sell new passes. They want to keep the goodwill, but they also know that they're going to have to deal with exposure one way or the other.
You know, it's funny, Steve, as we're sitting here, I just got a text from a listener asking about whether the new Epic Pass has a clause that's saying if you take advantage of the discount, you opt out, you are automatically waiving your rights to a class action. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So this happens a lot in all types of class actions. It's referred to as picking off class members. And what happened? Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
We just had a little.
Oh, good. Okay. So in the case of Epic, as part of their package, and if you want to renew your season pass and take advantage of the credit, that's great. But they have you sign a waiver, or you agree to a waiver that you will not be a member of the class. I think that's smart. And if they're getting a reasonable rebate or discount on next year's pass, that's a way of getting rid of some of their exposure. I haven't seen that requirement, and maybe it exists, but I haven't seen that on the Icon pass yet. But so they're trying to pick off class members and reduce their exposure, which is prudent on their part.
So does it make sense for me as an Epic Pass holder to... Well, Vail has given the pass holders the ability to get the discount up until about Labor Day. So if I wait and don't put in a commitment to purchase next season's pass, I can still leave that class action potential open to me until about that last date in which they are kind of securing that guarantee of a discount off of this year.
You can. There's actually another option, too, but in answer to your question, yes, you can do that.
What's the other option?
I don't think there's anything that prevents any ski pass holder that from bringing a small claims action right now. That they don't necessarily have to go with the class case if they believe that their damages are more than that which is being offered right now, or they don't want to wait for the class action to finish, there's a chance the class action may not even be certified. They may not get as much. So anybody who has a pass from last year can take a shot at bringing their matter in small claims court.
Let's talk about that for a minute. If you were advising someone who walked into your office, and let's flesh out our hypothetical and make it a little sexier. I have pre-booked an expensive home for 7 days for the third weekend in March. I have bought non-refundable airplane tickets, and I of course have an Epic Pass, and the value of all of that was jeopardized by you closing the lifts. Would that be a viable claim, and could any of those other things be rolled into my claim against Vail?
Well, that's that you're talking about now consequential damages and other damages that flow from the initial harm. And that's certainly something that should be alleged. You might find that different judges in different jurisdictions may accept that or they may not. I don't know. That's a great point. I don't know the answer to that question. If I was a plaintiff who decided to file this action in small claims court, I would allege it. I mean, there's no harm in asking for it. Certainly be prepared to prove it. They're going to say, well, that they shouldn't have to pay those damages. But I don't know how that would work out.
Because the way I look at it, and it's an interesting piece, is just if you were to go forward with that trip and you arrive feet on the ground here in Park City on the 15th, you still were looking at the restaurants being closed at that time. Lodging started shutting down. So it's not necessarily that those things happened because the resort shut down. It was because of a different action.
Well, they closed down because of the virus, as did the ski areas.
And that's what would make a lawsuit of this kind pretty complicated. Steve, before we go, I wanted to broaden our discussion a little bit to talk about how, in your view, as an experienced sort of plaintiff's lawyer, the coronavirus presents other potentials for litigation. Can you talk a little bit about some other things, thoughts you have about other litigation we might see?
Right. So these past issues, I think, are the tip of the iceberg. There are so many possibilities out there. I'll just give a handful that you and your listeners might want to consider. So one is workers' compensation. If somebody's working for a company and they get sick on the job, many states protect workers from both injury and illness. And if that illness were to result in a death, the family, the survivors could bring an action under workers' comp for wrongful death or the injuries that are sustained. So that's one thing. I think employees of these ski areas are going to be bringing cases. Part of the package the employees get is a season pass, and they didn't pay for it, but they got it as part of their compensation package. So I could see employees bringing cases as well. There are there's mass layoffs too. There's both state and federal what are called WARN Acts, where generally certain companies that qualify, if they have, I don't know the number, 100 or more employees, and there's other conditions as well, if there's a mass layoff, they're supposed to give employees 60 days notice to include 60 days paid benefits that they were getting before. And if they just lay everybody off immediately, they may be entitled to 60 days additional compensation.
Wow. So there's, as you said, quite a few avenues that people can start looking at to go down and explore what it meant to them for the ski areas to close so soon.
Right. And this just isn't the ski area industry. It's all industries, and it's everywhere.
No, I really appreciate it.
Steve, thanks for joining us today. I think that
we're
going to see a lot of continued litigation and a lot of tension. I know recently in the Senate they're looking at providing some kind of immunity for businesses pertaining to the opening of employees. And it may be that as things develop, we'll ask you to come back and talk about that. Mountain Money will be right back. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you.
Mountain Money will be right back after this.